and welcome to the Laughing Place Podcast. This is the May 4th edition of the Laughing Place Podcast. We are so glad that you decided to come back and share it with us. Or if it's your first time, we're glad you decided to share it with us for the first time. If you'd like to reach us, it's podcast@laughingplace.com or 866-718-9408. Or ignore both of those methods and just go post on the discussion boards like everyone else seems to do. So let's get started. Before we get into the fun stuff that is typical of the Laughing Place podcast, we do have to start with some very sad news. John Ratzenberger was knocked off Dancing with the Stars this week.
Aww.
So.
That and Tom Poston died.
That was sad.
That's real sad news.
Yeah.
But where is my mind?
But you know what I learned? I learned he was married to Suzanne Plachet, which I didn't know.
Which is weird, because whenever he would wake up, there would be Suzanne Plachet.
That's exactly what we
That's what happened on his last episode.
Exactly, because he was part of Newhart, and that's how that show wrapped up.
Where is my head?
And not to mention he was on Princess Diaries 2, yep. The Suite Life.
Yes. 8 Simple Rules.
But no one knows who you people are, because I forgot the most important part of the show, the introductions.
They don't need to know who we are.
Yeah, we do.
No.
Yeah, we do. It's a part of the show.
Okay, go ahead.
We have first-time listeners here.
Okay, well, go ahead.
Anyway, introduce my name is Doobie. I'm your host.
Hi,
and
Doobie.
With me today, our fanboy.
Hi, long-time listener, first-time caller.
Captain John.
Gungaloosh me, hearties.
And Rebecca.
To quote my favorite radio personality, doing better than most and not as good as some.
Mr. What is he now? Internet Radio?
He's actually going by his actual name. No, he's
Mr. Citadel Broadcasting.
He's on KTLK out in California.
Did you know he's actually the voice of Jack?
No, he's not. That's a myth.
I don't know. I haven't seen it on Mythbusters. Anyway.
Although he, you know, he couldn't say if he was. So there you have it.
All right, so we've gotten through our sad news. We get on to some happier stuff. Disney's California Adventure. A source of much interest this week on the various fan sites for two reasons. One, a message on the website omeon.com, that's O-M-E-O-N.com, where he talked about the fact that maybe DCA has actually finalized some plans, but they're not quite ready to announce it, or the various reasons maybe they have or haven't announced it. And then on Screamscape, they put up a map of what DCA could look like in 2010, including various changes, a couple of new attractions, a big new lagoon show, etc. So let's talk about it.
Looking at the Screamscape image, let's see. He's got Crush's Coaster replacing Mulholland Madness. The area where the Jumpin' Jellyfish are might be relocated, and I guess that would be to permit more viewing of the World of Color. That's the name of that lagoon show.
The world is a carousel of color.
Color, color, color.
And then Carland, which I guess there was some publicity artwork in the annual report that mm-hmm. showed Carland, that he has over by the Pacific Wharf, behind Pacific Wharf, kind of in between the coaster and the parking lot, over by California Screamin', you have the addition of Midway Mania, which I think we all know that is not a rumor, right? That is right. Where that's going. We see the construction right now. And then,
calling it Midway Mania is a rumor. Technically, it'd be Toy Story Mania,
yeah, okay.
which adds an interesting thought to the authenticity of this photo.
But if you look really closely, you can see in the diagram, it looks like the building is going over the freeway.
extends over the road.
See, it's like
is that the freeway?
No, that's the road.
That's the
Freeway road.
It's the road between the parking lot and the
Catella.
Timon and the other. And then the last thing that he shows, well, no, there's two more things that he shows, and that's the parachute drop replacing the Malibuumer and an extension of Grizzly River Run. I'm sorry, animatronics being added to Grizzly River Run, and then an extension of Grizzly Park, which would replace the Condor Flats area, which I'm not exactly sure what that means because Soarin's there. So that's what the map shows. What do you guys think? Oh, and Golden Zephyr replacing Orange Stinger.
Yeah, moving to where the Orange Stinger is again.
Which
for World of Color purposes?
Is there a tremendous difference in just overall occupancy? No, not occupancy.
Capacity.
Capacity. That's the word. Capacity. That's the hotel.
One is bad and one is really bad, if I recall correctly.
I thought Orange Stinger would be the higher capacity.
Orange Stinger would have a higher capacity than Golden Zephyr.
Not to mention Golden Zephyr has to close.
And Golden Zephyr bringing true the story that attraction must close at all theme parks and not operate correctly.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's one of those. We were just talking about this the other day, how the Golden Zephyr, when they first announced that, they talked about how it had been at many theme parks, you know, many amusement parks over its history, but that they'd all closed and for operational reasons. And we were like, why are you building one? And true to form, it was closed a lot of the time due to high winds. So
high is a little bit if you feel a breeze, then it's closed.
In other postings on Screamscape this week, they've expounded on some of these. They said the World of Color, and of course this is all complete rumor, the World of Color is budgeted right now at about $65 million, and a nightly budget, what it costs to put the show on every night, at twice what it costs to do Fantasmic. So they're talking about a major show.
Wait, and Fantasmic comes in at usually, what did they used to quote, like $1,000 a minute or something?
Yeah, I remember, because it was $22,000.
$22,000,
to be fair, the number he said here, which I don't have it in front of me, was not twice that. So I don't know if Fantasmic's gotten cheaper, or we had bad info then or now, or whatever, but...
Yeah, I find that hard to believe, namely because the thing that makes Fantasmic so expensive is the Pirates unit for Peter Pan, because of all the stuntmen. That's all they do, and they're on an 8-hour shift, and the stuntman union and stuff like that. So unless they expect to have some huge stunt component of it, it would take a lot, and I mean a lot, to equal Fantasmic's budget.
If they do have a huge stunt component, I hope they just maybe offset the show about a half hour from Fantasmic, because I know some stuntmen that are available since they're on an 8-hour shift.
Good point.
Maybe they'll take the set from Hollywood Backlot. Remember that show where they would...
Get a grip.
Okay, lights cover chaos.
And here's the thing. So $44,000, let's say, right?
Right.
That's what? $10 from every DCA guest? Does that seem...
Theoretically, this will bring in more than 4,400 people into a park to see it.
Okay, well, yeah, but, you know, not living in Fantasyland... That just, I mean, considering most guests don't actually pay to come into DCA, you know, with their annual passes and everything.
Like I said, the number was not 44,000. I don't have here what the number was, but he said twice, but the number didn't correspond to what we think of as twice Fantasmic.
It's a good thing Paradise Pier has all that food, like Boardwalk Betsy's and everything,
Malabritos.
To, you know, so while guests are waiting to watch the show, they have something to eat.
Nice sarcastic tone there. We know those both have closed.
Okay.
He also said on Screamscape that with the Grizzly chain, Soarin would get a new movie that would be a more wilderness movie. And Carland, he said, is similar to Test Track, but more fun.
And operates.
Well, he didn't. We never know until it opens.
Okay, now, the Soarin becoming what? That doesn't seem to make any sense.
There was a new theme for the Soarin movie. Something seemed more toward the wilderness to correspond with the expanding of the Grizzly Peak area.
But... Before, like, on Grizzly River Run, you're, like, on a raft in the wilderness. So now you're in the wilderness, and there's a simulator in the wilderness. And
maybe it's not a simulator. Maybe you're going for a flight over the wilderness.
Yeah.
It's just the hangar. Because right here on 192, we got helicopter rides.
All right.
Just thinking.
One of the criticisms of World of Color, this concept of a lagoon show, is a lack of viewing area. And this obviously, these moves would address that. If you were to move Jumpin' Jellyfish, or if you were to move Golden Zephyr, that obviously creates quite a bit more viewing locations. Do you see them moving those items? I mean, moving those attractions to accommodate the show?
I could see it just because they just seem to be very, you know, they're flat rides. So it seems like they are something that's relatively easy to just shift around. But not to mention, this is something sort of random, but with the whole Carland thing, I mean, I could sort of envision if they wanted to, they could put an elevated pathway just right there between Paradise Pier, just going by this diagram, and then you would add a bunch more space because it's relatively close to each other. So that whole area right there would actually could get more viewing, not really direct, but you'd be able to see it.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you look at Fantasmic as a model, I see us doomed to repeat all those mistakes. But, you know, they moved attractions and stuff, created viewing area, didn't create enough viewing area.
Then that whole bridge in front of Pirates.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And once again, I'm not entirely sold on all of this being accurate.
No, well, obviously. But I was just, it's just an interesting.
We're speculating here. Yeah.
Because, I don't see Soarin' changing its ride film to something wilderness. I could see them retheming the area to get rid of Condor Flats, as it were, and increase the Grizzly Peak Recreation Area into there. But I don't see them getting a new ride film.
And that's another thing. What would be the point of doing that, considering it's like a 5-foot radius of space? Does it really make that much of a difference to make it look more woodsy or whatever?
No.
That area is
WDI.
That area is kind of barren. When you come around that corner and you see Condor Flats, honestly, I always thought more like Vulture Gulch when I would go there. I just kind of expected to see circling vultures above my head there, because it was so kind of, I don't know, it's kind of deserted.
You got the cactus and the desert.
I mean, it's supposed to reflect like Mojave Desert. I mean, so they did it well, what they were reflecting, but it just seemed very kind of dead. So if
like
to add more lushness with the green and like they have over at Grizzly, I could see that being a more inviting first impression of the park.
Can't argue with that.
Next topic for today is the exciting release of 9 minutes of Ratatouille on the internet. We all get to see it?
Yep.
Dude, that was some good looking food.
Want some soup?
Oh, yeah.
Makes you want some soup. Doesn't make you want some soup, Rebecca. Rebecca, you have not been necessarily looking forward to Ratatouille as much as Pixar perhaps would like you to be. After 9 minutes of trailer, or excuse me, after 9 minutes of film clip, you want to see it more now?
No.
No?
Didn't
not do really. Anything for you?
No. I think it's because I like my animated films to be fantasy. So have a fantastical nature to them.
Yeah. So cooking mice are passé.
It's a kitchen. You've got chefs and waiters and patrons, and it's... The food. I mean, one of the things they keep talking about is how realistic the food looks. And I'm sure that that's very important to those within the industry, whatever, the advancements. And, wow, it's amazing
that
we can...
I thought you meant
not the food. not Epicurean people. No, not the food industry, but the computers. It's how exciting it is that we can create food that looks this real. Think about what Toy Story looked like versus, Ratatouille. But for me,
fact that the food looks real and everything doesn't like help sell it to you.
No, I'm sorry.
No. Pixar films have a history of not selling well, I think, and then when they actually come out, they're better. I remember Finding Nemo is a classic example. That was not very exciting for the trailers, at least I didn't find it very exciting, and that was a really great movie. So hopefully Ratatouille will be in that same category, because these clips did nothing for me.
But does it tell you that I'm excited to see the film?
Really?
So
even more than before you saw the clip, you think?
Yeah.
Cool.
I agree, too. I'm more excited by the clip. As I posted on my blog, I don't think Pixar does a good job promoting their movies. I've never seen a good Pixar trailer. And so to see this and kind of like it makes me excited that when I see the movie, and I'll really like it.
Yeah, I have a feeling. I'd be very surprised if I don't like the movie. But the trailer, the clip, honestly was kind of monotonous. It just didn't work for me.
Now, I'm just going to say this, but doesn't the rat, Remy, look a lot like Tutter from the Big Blue House?
No, he's not nearly as cute. And that was my problem. I was seriously, I wanted him to get squished by that cart. There's this thing, he's running and he almost gets squished, and I was kind of like disappointed.
Wow.
It's a rat. My thing was, I went into this trailer hoping that I would find the rat cute. Because up until now, I've kind of found him repulsive. And I still do. I can't get over him being a rat. He's not cute. Not like mice. Disney's used some of my favorite characters. I mean, we'll be talking about that in a little bit, but we're talking about heroes. And some of my favorite Disney heroes are actually mice. And they're cute. And they're not, they're not cute in real life. I would run and hide if I saw one in real life. In fact, I have before. But for whatever
reason.
That's
a girl thing, right?
Running and hiding. Well, no. Okay, I didn't really run
and hide.
It's
just a mouse.
It's startling. Have you ever been in a house when a mouse has come running at you?
Yeah. Is that going to eat me?
Well, no, but I mean, it didn't like...
A tiger? Yeah, that's scary.
But I mean, it didn't startle you? You didn't kind of, not want to be near it?
No, he's cute, like Mickey.
Okay. Apparently,
fascinating.
Disney has really infected your brain. But,
mice can be vicious.
Yes, they can.
I'm going to win. If he wants to bring it on...
Rabies.
Okay.
Bad boy versus the mouse.
That was definitely the comedy of the day.
But no, that was my thing, was I was really hoping that the trailer would make me care about the rat, because I haven't really felt any affinity for it, and it didn't. So, you know, I figure like I say, Pixar always, you know, wins me over in the theater, but the trailer itself hasn't yet.
Well, the one thing is that really, in the whole clip, the character seems to be sort of irritating intentionally, in the way that he's supposed to sort of make a turnaround, because you see, like, he sort of has an ego. So I think maybe you're finding him repulsive because of that, too. And I think that actually might be the point in that case.
Okay.
Sort of like in Cars, how the main hero of the story is
who's
sort of
irritating.
He's
at first.
Irritating. Yeah, I think it's the same sort of general flow in that regard.
Okay.
There's some other Pixar news this week. Fanboy, why don't you tell us about it?
Well, Brad Bird, in an interview, talked about how his next project's going to be a live-action film, which we've heard before, but he said that it was going to be a Pixar live-action film. And that, to me, was news. Well, in a manner of speaking. You know, there's talk that it'll be that John Carter of Mars project that we've heard off and on for a while, but it's interesting to me because we've heard that, you know, it put itself in the animation thing. We're not looking at greenlighting stories based on the way that it's going to be presented, but greenlighting the story and then finding the way to present it. So Disney Animation Studios was going to do traditional and CGI, and it just taking it to the next level by allowing Pixar to do live action as well. We've heard rumors before that they were looking at traditional animation as well. And so it really goes down to this mentality that Disney is just a group of creative modules, whether it's ImageWorks 3D with Robert Zemeckis Image Movers 3D with Robert Zemeckis, Pixar, Disney Animation Studio, and that they're all just there trying to create product through whatever means necessary. But I don't think you're going to see that get a lot of play, because it's really hard for Bob to explain that to the investment community. They just view it as, well, okay, this is going to be your 3D studio, this is going to be your 2D studio, this is going to be your live-action studio, when the industry as a whole has gone more to just creating studios. Like Fox has done, there's Fox Searchlight, there's Fox 2000, there's Fox Atomic, there's Fox Faith, and just creating different studios with different creative talent that create product in all sorts of mediums.
I can see why he has trouble getting it across, because it does seem odd. In the Fox examples you just mentioned, could any one of those four create any given film, or do they typically have a genre that they focus on?
Well, they typically have a genre they're focusing on, but they use different ways of presenting it. So Fox Faith is run by folks that are interested in creating faith-based movies.
Right. So,
they'll do animated movies, they'll do...
So I can understand what not restricting to a given medium,
right?
But this goes beyond that.
Well, it'll still be...
A given movie could have been a Pixar movie or a feature animation movie or
but
whatever.
But it's still going to be a Pixar movie in tone.
What does that mean?
In that it's going to be a family film, it's not going to be...
But that goes for Disney animation as well.
Right.
So what's the difference between Disney animation and Pixar animation? And
yeah,
I can see why
crew,
that
yeah.
has trouble getting through.
Right, and I don't this is new. This is a new sort of this creative community concept is new. I mean, it really just emerged out of the Pixar acquisition. So who knows if it'll work or not? But that's just
okay.
The way. I mean, and you know, it's interesting to see it looking at it other ways. You know, will ABC Television Studios now maybe make movies? Well, who knows? Why not?
Very fascinating. And I'd be excited to see Brad Bird do a live-action movie. Because,
yeah.
Like, all of his other stuff is awesome.
I'm all for Brad Bird doing a live-action movie, but I need to be in... Who am I? But I need to be sold on the concept that Pixar can make any given movie.
Well, and it's not that... It's not like they're going to create a new production arm or anything like that. They're going to work with, you know, Buena Vista to use their facilities. There's not going to be a lot of invested capital in there, but you're just talking about... When it comes down to story development, direction, the creative support for Brad Bird will come from Pixar. It's not going to be made at Pixar, filmed on location at Pixar.
One reason I'm very excited.
and you look at it, you know, it's very similar to what Walt did, you know, after the war, trying to get in on the live end of things. And he had it. I mean, he didn't have a live action studio to piggyback on, but trying to basically at that time the the movies sort of stemmed out of animation. You know, there was the same team. You know, Bob Iwerks worked on 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. And so it's done it number four.
Okay. We'll see what happens. Rebecca, what's next?
This week on Laughing Place, our resident film critic, Kirby, has posted his Disney's Greatest Heroes Top 50. And he posted part one earlier this week, and part two will be coming soon. But he broke out what he selected as the 50 greatest heroes into varying categories, such as With a Little Bit of Magic, where he focused on Mary Poppins, Matinee Idols, where he focused on the Kirk Douglas role of Ned Land. And he also focused on real American heroes such as Davy Crockett. And so we thought we'd talk about what some of our Disney heroes are. Doobie? Well,
why don't you start, Rebecca?
Me? I get to start?
You're a lady first.
Well, I'd have to say that in thinking about my favorite heroes, he talked about one of them, and that would be Elliot the Dragon. But to talk about one he didn't talk about, or at least not yet, I don't know what's coming in part two, I'd have to say Bernard from The Rescuers, probably, you know, with Bianca. They're so tiny, and Bernard hates to fly, and yet he, you know, overcomes that fear to accompany the lady friend, to go help the little girl who's in trouble. And then I also like, my other hero would have to be another mouse, and that would be Jacques from Cinderella, who braved Lucifer and the stairs to make sure that Cinderella did not stay locked up in the room while the Grand Duke was there so that she could try on the slipper.
I think you might like Ratatouille more than you think.
What about the
Aristocats with that mouse?
I haven't seen the Aristocats in a long time. In fact, so long, there was this Disney trivia game, and Doobie, Fanboy, and myself, anytime we didn't know the answer, we realized the answer was the Aristocats.
Which would make a great movie.
What, the Aristocats?
I'm surprised they haven't redone it in the live-action version.
That movie, The Aristocrats, wherever a bunch of people tell a joke.
Oh, the dirty joke?
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd make a great Disney movie.
Yeah. Well, I didn't say Disney movie. Oh.
I think that should be Pixar's second live-action project.
But I still say I'm surprised that they haven't remade The Aristocrats in a live-action version with a bunch of cats.
But I'm glad.
They did it with 101 Dalmatians.
Twice.
That's because everybody knows the butler did it.
But the dogs don't talk in that version of the movie. The Aristocats, you'd have to speak. And that would be more like Racing Stripes, the Disney version.
Cats and dogs. Stuart Little.
Babe.
Yeah.
Firehouse. I'm not saying it hasn't been done. I'm just saying that 101 Dalmatians, they didn't speak.
Okay, but back to the subject at hand. Doobie, who's your greatest hero?
Firehouse Dog didn't speak, did he?
He spoke to me on a personal level.
Okay, that's creepy.
Very. I have two as well. First would be Marlin from Finding Nemo, who was on Kirby's list, but he's a really good example because he was as scared as can be of everything, and yet he faces every one of his fears, whether it be sharks or everything else in the big blue world, pretty much breathing and moving beyond the coral, just to save little Nemo. And it's beautiful. And then it was brought to life wonderfully at the Finding Nemo the musical. It's a good job, you know. Where's my dad? I'm all alone. And he's there. He saved her. That's my dad. I knew all along. Underneath, he's really
big and strong.
Maybe brave and strong, probably.
I think it's brave and strong. Yeah, anyway. Good song, good character. Number two.
It's better when it's done by the cast.
Slightly.
Yeah.
Whatever.
That wasn't that bad.
Leaps and bounds. No, actually, yeah. I was surprised you held the tune. I was impressed.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Chicken Little.
Oh, dear.
Tell me that's not a great American hero.
I mean, he is a champion.
He saves he's a hero twice. He wins the big game, and then he saves the world. I'm not sure which is more important, but especially to him.
Ask the bowler hat guy.
Good point.
Yes, very true.
But Chicken Little is definitely an unsung hero. He faced a lot of big odds. He's very small.
Yes, he is.
He's got a reputation to live up to with his father.
Yes.
And he's the scourge of the town because of that little incident.
Just a small incident.
Yeah, just a little incident. And yet he comes back from all of it, despite all the odds and his weirdo friends. And I can relate to that part of his life. And he saves the world. So Chicken Little is my number one Disney hero. How about you, Fanboy?
Well, when I think of who my heroes are, I think of Dick Cook and Matt Wiemet.
Oh, boy.
and not so much, you know, the Peter Murphy era, but later on.
Hi, ay, ay.
You know, I watched that DVD, All-American Heroes with James Earl Jones, mm-hmm. you know, and they had John Henry on it. And I remember as a kid really liking Johnny Appleseed.
Oh, yeah.
And now I watch it, and he looks like a complete loon.
Yes, I would agree with you.
And you're like, dude, if he came up to me, I'd be like, call security.
And he really likes lard.
Yeah.
Oh, dude. That accent is so funny in that song. Yes,
the lard is good to me.
And so I, you know, every day I thank the lard. But, yeah, so so that brought up that. I did like John Henry, though. That, I know it's sort of hard to come by, but that's a really good short. And one thing I also really liked as a kid was Casey at the Bat. I mean, granted, he's not a hero because he loses.
Yeah.
But it's a good – it was on the DVD for some stupid reason. And another Casey, Casey Jr., not the train, the little – the Casey on the – you know,
Casey Jones.
Casey Jones, yeah.
The engineer.
Yeah, he's cool,
who's
too.
Always on time.
Yeah, and
but didn't Casey kind of Casey at the Bat? Didn't that sequel that they did with all of his daughters and all that? Didn't that kind of?
Oh, I forgot about that.
That one?
Dude.
Where he like still he dresses up as a girl and he's gonna strike out, but one of his daughters hits it, so he can still be he can be the hero and she can save his you know poor reputation. It's cute. I take it you haven't seen it, Doobie. You're looking at me with a totally glazed like, oh well, I'll show it to you later.
I believe it. Sounds good.
It was cute. I enjoyed it. How about you?
There was no joy in Mudville. The day Mighty Casey had struck out.
Very good. How about you, Mr.
In the
John?
End, it was Beauty that killed the beast.
It's the sled.
It's people.
You.
You.
It's a cookbook.
And that's the definitive one.
Okay, Mr. John.
Mr. John.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's Captain John.
Captain, yes.
Captain John.
Yes, Captain John, if you please. I'll give you a hint. You could probably smell him coming from a mile away.
Hmm.
Pumbaa?
Me?
That would work. What? You?
On certain days, after a long day at the park.
You drink rum?
No.
Well, then there you go. Yeah, Captain Jack Sparrow is... Very is a hero to me in a way because it's very fascinating. No matter, you know, he's a pirate and, you know, breaks the rules, whatever. But yet he always seems to get the good streak right at the end. It's something very fascinating. Like
at the end of Pirates 2.
Exactly. Exactly. That's a very good – he's a bit of a coward he is. He leaves while the Kraken is destroying the ship. But then in his good streak, he comes back. He blows the rum up, you know, his dear rum. He likes his rum, so he shoots the gun. The Kraken is, you know, attacked, and, you know, he saves everybody. But inevitably, they kill him, but that's beside the point, so.
Shocking that you would choose Jack Sparrow.
Shocking, yeah.
Do you have any animated heroes?
Sully from Monsters, Inc.
Ah, Sully.
He's on Kirby's list. That's a great example. He's in the father's category, I believe.
Yes, it's he risks.
Is there a story about there that was it only in the novelization about the true nature of Boo and Sully's relationship? Because I don't think he was her father.
Well, but he's a surrogate. He's a surrogate dad.
Yeah,
but he was like
figure.
A kitty figure.
He's a father figure.
He saves her. Yeah. When's the last time your cat saved your life?
Oh, if I don't have a cat.
Okay.
Those dog dials 911 all the time. You see them on the news.
Similar to Baloo and Mowgli, which is another one on his list. It's like that kind of thing. The father figure
that tells him to do nothing.
Exactly.
I have a question for you experts.
An expert.
Eglantine is on the list. Why is she heroic?
Because she fights the bad guys in the movie. Who was the
You
is
have
it,
not
is it the
seen
Germans
Ben.
At the time?
If
no.
you had seen
who
Ben
were
Knobs
the
and Broomsticks.
Fighting? In the Ben Knobs and Broomsticks.
Oh,
who are they fighting?
Well, she wins the soccer match.
No, it's not. That doesn't matter. That's like on the boom boo. But
it puts her on Chicken Little level.
The Germans,
no, yeah,
isn't
see,
it?
I was
it's
right.
Germans.
It's during World War II, and she helps fight the off the British land.
So does this basically have the same story as Return to Neverland?
Yes, except with much better music.
No.
After all, it's a step road. Portobello Road.
Nana 2.
Oh, that's my hero.
Nana 2?
Well, Nana.
Were you with us when we saw Return to Neverland fanboy?
Yes, because how do you forget
us
laughing? Nanatu!
I have a visual of we were in the theater, the bombs are dropping on England, the children are running, and the little girl yells out, Nanatu! And I remember Doobie laughing hysterically, to which I'm really embarrassed because we're in a theater with families and there's bombs going off and my husband is laughing. But I forgot you were there, fanboy. Sorry about that.
They named the dog Nanatu. Yes, how can you not laugh?
I was also there when we saw Piglet's Big Movie.
Have you heard about Piglet?
Oh, that was funny. The theater marquee wasn't big enough to say Piglet's Big Movie. So no, it was the ticket. So our ticket stubs just said Piglet's Buy. Piglet's Buy. We're like, oh, okay, well.
Yeah, I was just going to say they left off the G and leave the rest to our...
Oh, no. You gotta spell it out there. Yeah, well, it's just kind of funny.
Yeah, you know, to pie. Each his own.
Yeah, we don't know what Piglet is, so it's given it.
A lot of people don't know who Piglet
is. Piglet a boy or a girl?
Piglet's a guy.
Apparently.
How do you know?
For one thing, he's played by a guy.
Nemo's played by a girl in the show.
And Bart is voiced by a girl. Simpson. Not a Disney character.
And Turk. Boy or girl?
Well, the full name is Turkina. So you have to assume it's a girl.
But during the whole movie, I just assumed it was a guy.
I did too. Yeah. I totally did. It wasn't until much later that somebody made a comment about Turkina, and I was like, okay. I mean, I know it's voiced by Rosie O'Donnell, but like I say, with voice talent,
that's why you thought it was a guy.
You really never know.
I guess that depends on your point of view.
Captain, save us, please, please, be our hero.
Oh, nice segue.
Thank you.
Good job.
You're welcome. Doobie, you're my hero.
You know, after all those past times when...
Bad boy, you're my damsel in distress.
You're the wind beneath my wings.
Ay, ay, ay.
Captain, please.
Please. All right, because we were talking about the Pixar company earlier on in the show, I've got a question for... Are you all ready?
Yes.
Hands on
yes,
the
we're ready.
Non-existent buzzers.
Okay,
are we all ready?
Hands are on the okay. Non-existent
Luxo
buzzers.
Luxo Jr., the famous Pixar short, was released in what year?
Beep, 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 beep. I really have no idea, but I figure I might as well guess since I could win.
Right.
1987.
So close.
Beep. All 1988.
Right. So close. You're further, though. You're close.
Using the Price is Right method of giving it away.
Go ahead, you guys. I don't know.
Come on.
Beep, 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 beep. 1986.
You are correct. All right. It was released in 1986. I believe it was debuted at SIGGRAPH in that year, in around August. All right. Now.
That was hard. I would have thought much later.
All right. Now, I saw the discussion boards, and people were wondering, you know, it may be more fun if I gave the answer to the second question at a podcast later. So I figured I'd... Your wish is my command right there.
That's a jolly good idea.
A jolly good idea. That's actually what I was going to do before. I don't know why I changed my mind. I'll have to figure that out sometime. Anyway...
Too much rum.
Yeah, blame the rum. Blame the rum. All right, the computer animation production system, the CAP system, which was, you know, a Pixar.
Is that what CAP stands for?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Okay.
Oh, you learn something new every day.
Yeah.
All right, the question is, which was the first film to be made completely using the CAP system? This is a bit of a trick question because some films beforehand, you know, were not entirely produced using the CAP system, only a couple of scenes. So the question is, which was the entirety? Which movie was used entirely?
Thank you, Captain. We will not have the answer later in the show because the Captain is requesting answers be posted in our discussion boards.
Exactly.
So
I'll go home and post.
And you usually forget to ask me at the end of the show anyway, so it'll just be like, you know, old times.
Next week I have to remember to ask you the answer from this week.
Will we do that at the beginning or just like at the same Captain's Challenge time?
I think it's the same Captain Challenge time, Captain's Challenge place, pow, bam, boom. Fanboy, there's
yes.
Some huge news in the Disney Board of Directors ranks this week.
Yes, huge. Huge.
Tell us all about it.
Okay, well, Susan Arnold was, voted in as a director of the Board of Directors, for the Walt Disney Company. She is from Procter & Gamble, also where John Pepper was from, who is chairman of the board. So, you know, I wonder what the connection is there. And John Pepper went on record saying that he wants more diversity in the board. Susan Arnold is, I believe, a woman. And that would make three women. You would have Judith Estrin, who was the target of the Save Disney campaign. And Monica Lorenzo, who is runs the L'Opinion, I'm sorry, Lozano, who runs the L'Opinion newspaper, which is the largest Spanish language newspaper. She comes from Procter & Gamble Health and Beauty, so she does toothpaste and beauty products. So they're hoping that, I'm guessing, that she'll have some information about the Disney consumer products business. It seems the only thing she would have much credit to do. But, I mean, there's also things like compensation and audit committee and stuff that really you don't require an entertainment business knowledge to do.
I hadn't thought about the fact that Judith Estrin had kind of survived that whole thing. You know, they targeted various individuals, and most of them are, I mean, for the most part, they're all gone now. I mean, some because just they retired, like Mitchell, right?
Mitchell retired at the mandatory age of 65. Yeah, she's been on the board since 1998, which makes her the longest-serving director at this time.
Really?
Yeah.
Not even 10 years? Is that typical for a big company to have turnover that much?
Well, I think when we instituted the mandatory retirement age, I think, you know, you're not going to get on the board of directors until in your 50s, and then...
Good point.
But, you know, and she's only 52 at this time, so...
My question was, is it typical to have... I know that John Pepper's background with the Procter & Gamble, is it typical to see another board of director member be brought in from the same company that... Is that common?
It's not uncommon, but what surprises me about it, with all this stuff about corporate... governance, it surprises me that they won't have another Procter & Gamble person, because she's, you know, she's an independent director, as so is, you know, John Pepper. But it appearances being what they are,
right.
I don't know what kind of background. I mean, they might never met each other, which I find unlikely, but, you know.
Exactly.
You know, I don't know their history. Is that it would appear that that would be a sect of the board, and they would vote together, you know, and that sort of recreates the scenario we had when Save Disney came about, where there was the Michael Eisner sect and the Rory Stanley sect. And I don't know that that's excuse me, the best thing to do. But
But the board obviously was comfortable with it. And like we it's only based on just appearance for us.
And, you know, what I find interesting, or at least, you know, a natural thought, is that she functionally replaces Leo O'Donovan on the board, who was he's a priest,
right?
And he was the head of Yale University, and he got on the board because Michael Eisner's son went to Yale, and so there was obviously a relationship. I mean he's a priest. I don't imagine he's Mr. High Power Broker,
right?
But,
no, I understand.
You know, or I would hope that he has a high moral compass, but it's really a change from the Eisner created board to the John Pepper created board.
That'll
any thoughts? Anybody have any great Susan Arnold stories?
I was a big fan of hers when she first came out. She was like the domestic goddess.
Okay, before. That would be Roseanne Arnold, but now she's just Roseanne.
Didn't she go back to Barr?
I think so, but I think then she just went to Roseanne.
And now she might be going to The View, if rumors are to be believed.
Oh, seriously? I hadn't heard that rumor.
You know why? Then they don't have to change any of the letterhead.
Rosie is short for Roseanne.
And also the voice of a Disney character.
From the one we never saw.
The one you never saw.
Home on the Range.
Bust a Move, April 2.
We so need to go see that. They show that every once in a while, I think, over at Fort Wilderness. We should go do, like,
When the cast wants to get home early.
Speaking of movies.
Oh, that really clears about
movies.
Movies.
There's a big one coming out this weekend, isn't there?
Spider-Man.
Seriously, that comes out this weekend?
Does whatever a spider can.
You're coming.
Spins
no,
a web. Anybody know the Spider-Man connection to Disney?
No.
No.
As part of the Fox family acquisition, Disney acquired the Spider-Man song, so at the end of... after end of all the Spider-Man movies, it says Spider-Man theme or whatever it's called. courtesy of ABC Family or Disney or whatever.
I knew that. Spider-Man 3 is the first of the three humongous.
Before you continue, I got a question.
Yes.
Where does the Spider-Man song rank in your favorite Disney songs?
Just between Eglantine and Perfect Isn't Easy, But It's Me.
I mean, do you get the subtle... I mean, to me, it's like one of those great songs where you can just go... At the scene of the crime, just in time, he arrives.
Like a stream of light or like a laser light? Which one do you pick? Do you pick the monitor?
Stream of light. No, because we don't know the rights to that one. Spider-Man. Spider-Man does whatever a spider can. You see the subtext?
That he's going to kill Kirsten Dunst at some point?
What?
Oh, no, wait. Kirsten Dunst's going to kill him.
I was going to say, that's the way that works.
Yeah.
Why is Kirsten... Oh, because... No, it's not... That's why Spider-Man's a man and not a woman. Because Spider-Woman, that's a whole other...
Can I move on?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Can I move...
And you think that we would have this... And so, here's the other thing. The Spider-Man song is in the Spider-Man ride at Universal. I think we should revoke their rights to it.
But it's not sung. Does it have to do with the lyrics? Or
no,
does it have
we
to
own
just
the
do
song.
With the tune?
The tune.
It was written by Exotencia.
Stop.
In fact, in the Spider-Man ride.
That's
Exotencia.
I can just see people going to Wikipedia, changing the Spider-Man entry. Spider-Man, the song was written by Exotencia.
That'd be big of that change.
Dude, that was scary.
But Spider-Man 3 is the first of three humongous sequels coming out this summer. The second will be, if I'm not mistaken, Pirates of the Caribbean.
At World's End.
Legend of the...
At World's End.
And then Harry Potter.
5.
Doesn't have a name.
The Order of the
Phoenix.
Okay.
Which is funny, because you could go see a premiere showing of Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End and segue directly into the premiere showing of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix.
That's how long it is.
If you leave early.
What about
this trailer?
But you're forgetting Shrek the Third. That's actually a 3 movie.
Okay, let's throw that one in there.
Let me throw that one in there. Strike 2 was the biggest animated movie.
I agree. I forgot. So my question to the three esteemed panelists here is, I want your prediction now, and I'm going to write this down. I don't have to write it down now. I'm going to listen to this when I edit it later.
We don't edit.
I'll take that out.
But leave that in. But leave that in.
You guys are so weird. Okay,
you have no idea.
What... Give me your ranking of those four films, where they'll finish box office by the end of the year.
What about the other big sequel?
What?
You're forgetting the biggest sequel that Doobie's looking forward to.
Die Hard?
Yep.
It's not going to be in the above any of those four. It's rated R for one thing.
Well, that's a good point.
So, really quick, give me your rankings. Captain.
This is the four ones that we just mentioned.
Yep.
All right. Let's see here. Spider-Man would be in first. Pirates would be second. Then Shrek, then Potter, I think is how it would work. Well, I think with Pirates is that the problem is that it's longer than the other movies, meaning that it won't necessarily beat the one beforehand in box office wise because you can't show it as many times.
But Spider-Man's no 2-hour movie either.
True.
It's also lengthy.
But one thing that may have is that the legs on it might stay longer because if you can't see it, if you can't see it.
Fanboy, what do you got?
Okay, I think Pirates, then Spider-Man, then Shrek, then Harry Potter.
Rebecca?
I think Spider-Man, Pirates, Harry Potter, and Shrek. I don't think Shrek will do as well as Harry Potter. But yeah. I am torn. Because this one, this Potter, to be honest with you, I'm not going to... It's funny, these four films, I don't plan on seeing any of them. Because I'm a fuddy-duddy.
That's your... Yeah. I'm going to go with Pirates, Potter, Spider-Man, and Shrek.
Wow, you really think that Spider-Man's going to... kind of slip from what it
a
should
little bit, yeah.
Well, the audience is a bit different, but yet, however, this next Harry Potter is probably going to be intense, too. So.
Yeah. Well, I know with Spider-Man, we saw it more than once because it was kind of a buddy film. It was a fun flick.
Oh, yeah.
And I get the impression that this Spider-Man film is kind of dark, and I don't tend to repeat those. I tend to repeat like fun flicks more than I tend to repeat kind of dark, moody films.
The one that's kind of what bothered Booties, the fun film of the summer, is 747, more than
meets
the
eye.
Transformers.
Oh, that's right.
A Michael Bay film. So I expect when I go to Disney MGM Studios, instead of having Harbor Attack, I'll have...
Robots Attack.
Yeah.
That'd be funny.
With no particular movie title.
you don't want to call them Decepticons, because the Decepticons might get hurt if they're visiting the park.
But still, it's just sort of funny thing about how Pirates will work, just because it's longer than all the other, to my knowledge. So whether or not that means that it'll stay more money for a longer amount of time, because people will miss it, and then you'll just have more money keeping on flowing in rather than a lot of money at first, and then it drops off the face of the world.
Right. And then you could also end up with spillover in some of them, right? Because aren't they close enough together to where, like, let's say I want to go see the 7 o'clock Harry Potter, but it's all sold out, so maybe I'll fall back on, oh, hey, I liked Pirates, and it's available, and I'll
That's
go see it.
Ratatouille's counting on.
You know, that kind of thing. So, it'd be interesting. There's a lot of films this summer you guys want to see, which is good for me because it means the house is quiet. You guys go to the movies. I stay home.
Yeah, because she leaves us alone. Yeah.
All right. Well, we're getting close to the end of our show. It's that time where we go around the table and get final thoughts from our round table of Disney experts.
Where's that one at?
Experts.
Where are they?
The experts did not show up.
So
we're
going to
settle
here
for the four of us this week.
Exactly.
Start with you, Captain.
Tell me how that guy is back to life and Lost. Post it on the discussion boards or something. I don't get it. Tell me why.
What guy?
Michael. Isn't that his name Michael? Or Mikhail?
The eye patch dude.
Eye patch dude.
Oh, okay. I was thinking Michael, the guy
no,
that
sorry.
We're not going to see.
Yeah, tell me how that works out.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
I'd like to know, too. Because his brains were flowing in that last episode, it would seem.
Yeah. It was
oh, no,
brains.
My eyes were closed. I didn't see
they
it.
They were a-flowing. And I need to flow me a few.
Do you have any final words other than that, fanboy?
I heard that you guys made an astounding discovery on one of your recent visits to park.
What was that?
You found the long-lost Rosita.
What's really ironic is we found her in the one place that no one ever goes. The Magic Kingdom parking plaza.
Oh, good point.
It was funny.
Hey, if you pay for parking at the Magic Kingdom, post on our discussion boards because I want to meet you.
Yeah, I can't think I've ever seen anybody bring money out. It's always an annual pass or a parking permit or something. I don't think I've
or
ever seen anybody
Or somebody's asking
pay.
How to get to the Polynesian, they turn around.
Not that we would ever advocate getting out of parking because, honestly, I've paid there once, I believe, because I was going to an after-hours event.
Oh, that's right. And we had to pay.
And the annual pass wasn't good for that, and I paid. You're going to hotel, hold up anything, and they'll think it's a cast member ID. Go the other way.
No, there are many ways that you can avoid the toll booth. But
ways better than, you know, parking at a hotel that you're not staying at, which I certainly would not advocate, especially considering how easy it is to get out of it other ways. But
it's so wild. I've always wondered why they're there.
But they are. Somebody must pay.
But
anyway, Rosita was the cast member last time. One of the recent times we went through there, we had to show our AP. We got to see her name tag, Rosita, and we passed through. And
of course, my husband has to say, hey.
Now we know.
Now we know where Rosita is. So next time Jose asks that question at the Tiki Room, my husband can blurt out, oh, over at the toll booth.
You know why Jose doesn't know? Because he never pays for parking at the Magic Kingdom.
His feet were nailed to the perch, but you're probably right.
Oh, poor Jose.
Rebecca.
Whatever happened to Rosita? Oh, I got an email, and I thought I would share it. It's from a listener in Chicago, and he writes, I just got back from Tampa, Orlando, Everglades, and really enjoyed my stay. I told you before that Dinosaur was my favorite ride of the moment, and now I wrote it, and it seems so out of date. I enjoyed Expedition Everest very much and thought the animatronic at the end was really spectacular.
Oh.
However, the PhilharMagic show was funny and charming, focusing on the core of what Disney is about to most people, the classic cartoons. That said, I was very impressed by the Universal rides, especially Mummy and Spider-Man. Disney doesn't do thrills much. It's more about the family ambiance, but Universal certainly knocked the socks off me. One thing that sort of bugged me, though, were the walkthrough presentations like Poseidon, Twister, and Earthquake. To me, these things simply do not work due to the time it takes to get so many people into one area from another. Disney is a little better at it, but still, I find it a bit annoying to stand in one room watching a fictitious setup simply to walk into another and see a similar thing. I know it's to control traffic, but still. I rode Spaceship Earth simply because you all talked about it, and yes, I loved the creaking, revolving seats. Also glad I was able to see the flower show while I was there. I must be getting older because I spent as much time in the butterfly tent as I used to spend running to thrill rides. I missed the educational aspect of Living Seas, but the Nemo additions were entertaining. I also felt the Mexico ride used to be a yawner to me, but now it's upbeat and more appealing due to the new additions. I did not, however, see any women's panties laying around Johnny Depp, the Johnny Depp character in the Magic Kingdom.
You have to get up close. It happens. I've witnessed it happen.
I just love he had sent me an email earlier talking about how certain things were his favorite ride of the moment. And I just think that's so apropos. It's like, you go to a theme park, you absolutely enjoy this ride, and then years later you go back, and for whatever reason, it doesn't grab you the same way anymore. So now the ride of the moment is Expedition Everest.
Expedition Everest.
You know.
Yes.
That ride.
Oh, wait for it.
Wait for it. Here it comes. It's three separate structures.
Three separate structures. There's one for the mountain, one for the track, and one for the Yeti, and there's enough thrust generated to power a 747.
Wow.
When he was talking about, when you said he was impressed with the audio animatronic, I thought you were going to talk about the bird.
It was funny. I was watching Fanboy when I read that line. He was like, huh? And then at the end, he was like, oh, okay. Not the very frightening. Because it's not very
well done. Do they even bother to
turn
it on? Because one time I went on and I didn't even see it.
Wow, your lucky day.
Exactly.
I heard one time that they don't run it. They don't turn it on when
Joe Rohde rides.
Yeah. If Joe Rohde's coming to the attraction, they make sure that the bird's not functional.
Apparently he doesn't like
and
it.
And here's
too
my
much.
Question then.
Why run it other
is
times?
It in it?
I don't know, but that's what someone from the attraction told me once was their operating procedure.
Podcast at laughingplace.com, 866-718-9408, or post a message in the discussion board.
Don't forget to answer the trivia question. It's Captain's Challenge. This is a reminder. Post. You have no idea what I am talking about.
I do, but I thought you were talking to me.
I was not talking to you.
And I'm like, no.
It's not always about you.
Yeah.
It should be.
At Cusco.
Cusco.
Wow, are you friends with Patrick Warburton? Oh, that's
welcome
my hero.
To Sorin.
He can do anything. He's like the Sterling Holloway of our generation.
Like the Jim Cummings.
No, Jim Cummings has more than one voice.
Touché.
But wait, that reminds me that on The Mummy, I always sing a Jim Cummings because he supplies the voice for The Mummy.
Really?
Yeah, he did it in the cartoon. To my knowledge, this is going by several different people, that he did it in the cartoon. There was a cartoon of The Mummy, and he played it there, so it was the same. He did it for the attraction, too. Either way, it sounds suspiciously a lot like him. So if you go there and start thinking Honey and Illuminations.
While I'm riding this attraction, I'm zooming around. Yeah. There's Egyptian pharaoh, dead pharaohs attacking me, and I'm going to start
Winnie
thinking
the yeah.
up, down, it's like, touch the ground.
Yeah. And it's like, welcome to The Mummy.
Well, yeah. Well, that's what I'm thinking. You know the scene in that attraction when there's the fire?
Yeah.
Over your head? Just go.
Yeah.
And it'll all disappear.
yep.
Oh, so disturbing.
What did he say? What said right before?
Reflections of Earth.
Earth. Yes.
What's before that?
We hope you enjoy our tale.
I think it's tonight's performance of.
Hey, but there's some.
Oh, man has gathered around the fire and told stories and blah, blah, blah.
Dreams come true. Happiest celebration on Earth.
Magical gatherings.
You
guys, this podcast has more false endings than a Steve Davison production.
Oh, that's because we're all such Steve Davison fans. We have to make sure that we have multiple endings.
Where's our children's choir?
I think that was earlier when Doobie was singing.
Yeah, that was Doobie.
That was the first false
Nemo,
ending.
Yeah. We'll shut up now.
And with that, we will close today's show, but I do want to leave the audience with one question that has raged on our discussion boards for the past how long have we had boards? About 5 years now? And
churros or turkey legs or whatever.
Why do you want to take my question?
Hey, I was just on the dark.
You were right.
Yeah, it's like when Doobie answers the final Jeopardy question before they post it, and he's right, so I have no time to think about it. It's very annoying.
Give me a category. I'll give you the answer.
He comes up with the final Jeopardy answer.
No, it's a question.
We give the question.
Oh, touche.
Yeah. But so do you want him to call in and tell him the life-changing stories behind?
I don't want to call. I don't want an email. I don't want to post. I just want people to ponder the imponderable, popcorn or churros.
But if you do call in, you know, you get extra points in the captain's bono.
Don't I get to pick turkey leg?
No. And that's for you three later on. We're going to have this discussion.
We're
going to
have this discussion. Popcorn or churros? Is it kettle corn or is it just normal, straight
normal
popcorn?
Normal corn.
Orville Redenbacher standard CGI man popcorn or Costco churros?
Not the ones with the pink strawberry sugar?
No strawberry sugar. No filling.
No filling.
Not the little puny 3-inch ones and not the mutant 12-foot ones either. We're talking
just standard
250
popcorn.
Standard churro.
Sugar
standard
churro.
Standard okay. Popcorn.
Did Jim fresh? Cummings do the voice of Orville Redenbacher?
Is it fresh? Are we talking
fresh? We can presume
fresh
both are
both?
Fresh.
Okay.
Both are fresh.
Okay, well, no, that's important.
It is. We can presume both are fresh.
Okay. Thank you.
Is Spider-Man fresh?
I'll think about that.
Very fresh.
Oh, good.
Very fresh. Popcorn to churros. See you next week. If you endured to this point, you are a better person than I am.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
I wonder what happened to Rosita.